You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
You guys have done a great job for Bison Nation throughout the years here. Great to be on with you.
Last time you had me on, I told you guys were the best in the business, and I really mean that. Your coverage of Bison basketball is always top-notch, and the players, the coaches, the fans, we all appreciate it.
I mean, I think you and your staff now have done an amazing job with the Bison Report. Again, I think it gives NDSU fans an outlet to go to for good football coverage, elite basketball coverage, and everything recruiting.
You know, I really appreciate you guys, Bison Report, for what you guys do for Bison football.
Here's your host and publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglow.
What is up, Bison fans, and welcome back to another episode of Bison Report Radio. I am your host and the publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum, and today I am somewhat flying solo. We will have a great interview, not really at the halfway point of the season, but we're getting there. Haven't had the chance to have number three in your program, number one in your hearts, Trevor Gebhardt, on the show as much as I would probably like to, but we have a great conversation with Trev, breaking down the win over UND, looking forward to Southern Illinois, and really just kind of taking a look at where this football team has come from the opening loss at Colorado, close as it may have been, to where they are right now, having started Valley play in absolutely dominating fashion, causing many to wonder if they are not the class of the conference and therefore the class of the FCS subdivision, as we are just 8 days away from NDSU versus South Dakota State. But you can't think like that. Got to go 1-0 every week. NDSU heads out to Carbondale, still the site of one of their more embarrassing road losses in Division I history, getting out there and smacked during the spring, the COVID spring of 2021. A lot of folks remember that game. Some folks remember the tenor of this very podcast after that loss did not sit super well with some. But heading out to SIU to take on the Salukis, want to take a quick venture, though, to Summit League Media Day. North Dakota State men picked third in the conference. I do believe Jakari White with some all-league love. I think they're sleeping on Noah Feddersen just a little bit, but I'll tell you what, this Bison basketball team, I'm excited. You're hearing this on a Friday. I'm going to practice today for the first time. A lot of new blood. Couple of things. Watched the Field of 68 interview with Jeff Goodman and Feddersen and Jakari White and David Richmond. Caught a couple of things there. Number one, I think Luke Kasuki being a captain, I just think he's going to play. So if you're looking at this NDSU men's basketball roster, you're trying to figure out, you know, from these returners, well, what does the rotation look like? Why, I think you're going to be hard pressed to explain to me that Damari Wheeler Thomas is not going to play when he's healthy. And that was an interesting nugget that we are going to have to get to. They played Derek Doucette last year as a true freshman. They're not going to sit him on the bench as a true sophomore. It's just not going to happen. DeJavis Miller, not going to sit on the bench. Of course, Feddersen going to be a part of what they do as well. Those are the guys that you assume are going to be a part of the rotation. Everything else is up in the air, right? The red shirt freshman transfer, Patrick Bath, does he get involved? Do Trayson Anderson or Andy Stefanowicz get on the floor at all as true freshmen? What's the deal with Jackson Mone? And I think we found out the deal with Jackson Mone. To me, I think Noah Feddersen in that interview gave up the ghost a little bit. I think offensively, Jackson is going to play the five. Noah is going to play the four. They'll switch that defensively where Noah Federson will probably guard the other team's center, and Jackson Mone will be out on the perimeter. He's a good athlete. He's going to be capable of that. But if you were wondering, you know, whether like Jeremiah Burke or Patrick Bath or somebody with a more traditional, or not even traditional, a more new wave four body type was going to start alongside either Federson or Mone, I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's going to happen what happened last year, where it's a lot of Andrew Morgan and Noah Federson together. I think you're going to see Jackson Mone and Noah Federson together a ton. I think the biggest news coming out of Summit League Media Day was David Richmond mentioning that he was hopeful that Damari Wheeler Thomas would be available when they start the season, but he was not, I believe the word that he used, he was not convicted that would happen, or he did not have conviction that he would have Damari Wheeler Thomas, the starting point guard for the last 2 years, available to him. Lots of other guys though looking for, you know, time. Like we mentioned, I believe if you're going to make Luke Kasupke a captain, he's going to play. So you figure Kasupke's going to play. You figure Mone's going to play. DWT, Jakari, Deset, Javis, and Federson are all going to play. That leaves Trayson Anderson, Patrick Bath, Eli Bradley potentially, but then newcomers Mason Miller and Brennan Watkins, and in addition to returning forward Jeremiah Burke, I think they're all kind of fighting for spots, you know. And I think, you know, look, we see every year how deep this NDSU team has been. I think that's been one big part of Coach Richmond's ability to recruit. They have had deeper teams than most of the other teams in the Summit League. You know, there's just been a couple of years where they've been caught without a dude. I think last year was one of those years. You know, no Grant Nelson. I don't think Bowden Scumberg or Andrew Morgan took the step that the Bison needed to get deep, where it was like, well, this is one of the best two or three players in the conference. The Bison didn't have one of the best two or three players in the conference last year. We'll see if that happens this year. No first team all Summit League guys going in, but I wouldn't be surprised if you could see that from Jakari White. I would not be surprised at all if you saw that from Mone or Federson. And the dark horse to me is just one of the highest rated recruits in the history of Bison basketball, and that is Tajavis Miller. I think there's a lot to unlock there. Super excited, hopefully soon, to get together with Coach Richmond, either in his office or my studio out in Horace, for our annual sit-down chat prior to the season. I think this team's got a really, really high ceiling. I think this league is about as wide open as it could possibly be. But those are my key takeaways from Summit League Media Day. The fact that I think Luke Kasupke is going to play. I think Jackson Mone and Noah Federson are going to start. I think Jakari White and Tajavis Miller are going to join them with whatever point guard that ends up being. And the scariest thing, or the biggest question, is the health of Damari Wheeler Thomas. How does NDSU manage him in a way that he is the best possible player in February and March? Is it Brennan Watkins from VMI? Is it Andy Stefanowicz, the true freshman? How do they protect Damari Wheeler Thomas, who's such an important part of what they do? My take on the UND game, it just makes the result last year in Grand Forks one of the stranger football games I've just ever seen. I don't understand how that happened. I really don't. You look at every other NDSU UND result. You look at not only, you know, UND being relatively unimpressive this year, you know, getting cracked by Iowa State and then losing by even more points to NDSU, but even the way that UND finished last season, getting blown out at Northern Iowa after beating NDSU, requiring overtime to beat Indiana State at home, one of the worst teams in the FCS last year, losing at South Dakota, needing a miracle to beat Illinois State on Senior Day at home and then losing and giving up 42 to Sac State in the playoffs. That was not a good football team. This year's team was not a good football team. Again, it just it makes last year's result in Grand Forks one of the strangest 60 minutes of football. And you get a block punt, you get a punt return, kick, touchdown, whatever. Just makes it one of the strangest 60 minutes of football that these eyes have seen. All right, folks, we are going to cut right now to a wonderful interview with my pal, Trevor Gebhardt. Welcoming in now for a little mid-season check-in on Bison football. He's number three in your program, but number one in your hearts, Trevor Gebhardt. Geb, buddy, how are you doing, man?
Doing well, Ross. Appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a little bit different format. I said we were just going to kind of roll. I'll take care of and let's just put it all on the table. Southern Illinois has completely fallen apart. The injury rash. I mean, I don't even like. Let's look. I'll look right here. This is great, great podcasting. But I'm gonna tell you right now what the line on this game is.
I mean, they got their third string. Their third string didn't.
Yeah.
Was there something about?
And it's multiple injuries in some of the same position groups too. Like it's problematic.
Okay.
So
what? There was something about like their GA getting asked to be in a waiver or something, wasn't there?
Well, dude, they're trying to zeb it up. That they're down to one healthy QB. It'd be like if we got real low in the QB room and we started to, you know, we called down to Washburn to ask about Coach Jared Taylor's final year of eligibility just to see if old boy could spin it. I mean, they're down to the nitty gritty, man.
I know JT wouldn't be opposed to that, but that is, yeah, that's just a tough deal, especially in the middle of Valley play. That's tough.
I know. So, North Dakota State right now, according to the Reddit file that keeps track of this stuff, 26-point road favorites. Anytime you are a 4-touchdown road favorite, and I hate to say it, I would hit the Bison, and I would hit the Bison relatively hard, guys, because I don't know if Southern Illinois is going to make it to 10. And I will tell you that whether it's Nathan
Hooker
Hayes,
Crook, they're hitting 40.
Yeah. Nathan Hayes, Cole Payton, Cam Miller, Coach Taylor. It doesn't matter. They're getting
listen,
to 40.
He's going to text us and tell us how excited he got. So we bet.
Well, fun fact, you guys are getting this show on a Friday. Coach Taylor, his folks were in town this past weekend. He competed against his offensive coordinator and college coach, Frickty, who's the OC now at UND. He was Jared's offensive coordinator when Jared played quarterback for the Wolves. So just a big weekend for him. We're going to have him on the Bison Report show, kicking off 6 hours of pregame coverage tomorrow on Bison 1660. So you can check that out. That's maybe why I dropped his name. He's front of mind. I got to call him later tonight to record that interview. But there's not a ton of Southern Illinois to break down. You guys are this far into the show. You've heard our discussion about the Summit League Media Day and men's basketball and everything that's kind of going on there. But we just wanted to get Trevor on and kind of discuss because I'm going to pick the Bison by probably 35 or 38 points when we get to the end of this episode. How much fun is breaking down a game like that? Not that much fun. That's the answer.
Yeah.
All right, Geb, let's go broad strokes. Cause you know, you and I have had some, you know, like, I don't know, scheduling conflicts, whatever it is. Like we just haven't been able to do this every week.
Right.
Life is life. What do you think as far as like what you've seen from the beginning of the season until now? I know the one thing that everyone's going to talk about, I guess, is wanting to either believe or not believe specifically that the run defense is for real, right? That's, I think, the biggest thing that's on everybody's mind. Problem toward the end of last season, really not a great situation, ETSU or Towson. Now two really strong run defense showings in a row against Valley, but you talk run defense, you can talk whatever. Where have you seen the most growth from Colorado until now?
Well, it's probably, you know, maybe a little bit more recently, and maybe it's just the most glaring one because of that being like the recency bias there, was that switch from Frieda to Strong with Sam Young. And it's, you know, they've had that for 2 weeks and the defense seems to be in a better position. So is that the case that the run defense has been better? I don't really know. Two games, it starts to be a trend. But I think the encouraging thing is in non-con play, with that being the, you know, kind of that question mark of like, is this going to be the Achilles heel of the team? And if there is going to be one, I still think that would be the case, full disclosure. But when they turn the page to Valley play, and that has not been the case, that is a very encouraging sign that something has changed and it has worked. Especially when you come out of the gates hot and put a shellacking on Illinois State. I did not expect that at all. So, you know, I think they're trending in a direction to where, you know, kind of that national championship, like gritty it factor is kind of coming back from a cultural perspective. But I think it just needs to be consistent for, you know, especially these next two games. I mean, you got the ultimate trap game coming up here against Southern Illinois. Then you're back home against the game that you have circled on your calendar all year in South Dakota State. So if they can show, you know, they don't necessarily have to blow out South Dakota State and win by 50 against Southern Illinois, but if they can just take care of business and perform to the level and consistency that they had in the last 2 weeks, I think that will give us the answer in terms of what the run defense really is. Are they for real or are they the Achilles heel?
I agree. And I think it's the, you know, although people were worried about the pass defense too, when, you know, two first round picks carved them up in week one, but I'm just not that concerned about that at this time. You look at South Dakota State, you look at the teams that you're probably going to have to beat to win a title. You look out at Montana State, you look at South Dakota State, and I want to get on record here. I think Griffin Wilde is a hell of a player. I do. This is not.
I could have told you that 3 years ago. I mean, one of my high school buddies was the O-line coach at Sioux Falls Jefferson, and he was texting me raving about this kid for a while.
And I'm fine with all that. Like I'm with you, Trev. I got no problems with that. What I'm saying is, like, I don't think Griffin Wilde himself is gonna beat you in a game. Like,
oh, I see. If that makes sense,
yeah. I'm saying like of the top five FCS teams that I would say like these five FCS teams could stand in the way of North Dakota State winning a national championship. Yep. None of them, in my mind, right now, can just throw the ball all over the Bison.
There's no one in FCS that's like Travis Hunter. Is that what you're saying?
Or Jimmy Horn? Or
you're right.
Burr or yeah, like and the reason I even threw out the Griffin Wilde thing is because I just don't need South Dakota State fans in my mentions about it. And oh, we have, you know, a potential first team All America wide receiver. You do?
Yeah, he's just done.
Right, the guy, and you and I are both on that same page. I just like, I don't know that Griffin Wilde alone can beat NDSU. Now,
well, it took the guy who's second in the Heisman favorites right now to score three touchdowns to beat him by five.
Yeah, right. No, yeah. Exactly. And yeah. I just think without, you know, what SDSU has had at the tight end position and certainly being able to rotate these absolute slot machine mavens in the Yankee Twins – like Wilde just is having to carry more of the load than I think, you know, really anybody there has, even since Wenneke, although I think for at least a time Wenneke played with Goddard, or am I thinking of something else?
No, he did.
Right.
They crossed paths. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I'm not saying he's on his own, but it's just, it's not like that was the biggest problem with South Dakota State is you had Kraft and Hines and Yankee Twins and the run threat from the QB and Isaiah Davis. So it was like,
yeah, he's okay. He was an okay player.
So many different things, or Pierre Strong Jr. before that, like what, whomever, but
yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, I'm comfortable, you know, if you still, you know, put a gun to my head and we're like, NDSU didn't win the national championship. What happened? I'm with you. I'd probably say something bad happened defensively.
Mm-hmm.
with that said, why is everything going so well on offense right now? I think we were all a little bit concerned. You lose three offensive linemen, two of them go to the NFL. You lose Eli Green, which that whole thing sucks, man. You look at his lack of production at Iowa State, and I'm not going to blame Coach Roll. I'm not going to blame Coach Pauly. I'm not, because that's what everybody's going to say. Oh, these NDSU coaches did him in. That, you know, they brought him over here. Now he doesn't play, and they did the kid dirty. We don't know enough about the situation.
Yeah, it's the risk reward thing. I mean, you get paid to go somewhere, try to get more noticed. That's fine. You got to make decisions for yourself. Everybody does and has to.
Anyway,
yeah.
So you lose Eli. You lose three offensive linemen. Two out of the three go to the league. It's okay. Well, what is this group on offense? Well, it turns out it's just the best offense in the subdivision. That's the answer.
You're right.
And you're giving a lot of credit to the QB, I would assume.
Yeah. Seven's a huge part of it. I mean, the way he's elevated his play. I mean, my head a year ago when the season ended was that if that kid couldn't ascend the way he did from 22 to 23, from 23 to 24, this team was going to have a really, really good shot at winning the national championship game. You take into account South Dakota State loss, which was the cupboard. And, you know, they've got good players coming back, no doubt, but they're just not who they were at 23. And he is just so consistent and so steady and makes the exact plays that this team needs at the right times. You can't necessarily quantify what that does for a football team in terms of having success on the field offensively. And then you got the emergence of Bryce, which I know we all expected. I just don't think we expected to the level that he's produced. The kid's an absolute stud. Marty Brown picking up three extra yards every time he gets hit. You know, so all these factors coming into play, the pieces fit, and it just has gelled really well so far.
No, I totally agree, man. I absolutely do. Getting into your room, because I'm surprised it took you this long to give the receivers a bunch of credit.
To me, honestly, we get to it as it is. Yeah.
Honestly, dude, like it's the group for me. Like Cam, what I always said coming into the season was like, this is his Easton Stick final year, meaning that he's not, I don't think, quite the athlete Easton was, though. I don't know. I mean,
Easton was a freaky good athlete. Yeah. I don't think a lot of people realize how good of an athlete that kid actually is.
But then Cam sets the rushing record for touchdowns by in the Valley.
Yeah, I know.
He's something else. But like, I'm just talking about. So here's I'll give you a perfect example. Okay. Getting a new bed here at the house. Went out to my parents' lake cabin because they're getting a new mattress. So I got their old mattress loaded up in the back of our pickup. We go out to Zorba's, and my dad goes, "Is the new OC any good?" Because that's been kind of the whipping boy for NDSU fans for whatever. Before Fire Roll, it was Fire Polisek, and before Fire Polisek, it was Fire Vegan, and
you know, on and on and on.
On and on and on. It's always the OC. Stupid play calls, right? And I said, "Dad, I'd like to think so, but I don't know." And that is me not being disrespectful at all to Jake Landry, but how would you know? And the reason I say that is, who's the coordinator? Is Cam the coordinator? Is Randy the coordinator? Randy Hedberg? Is Polisek? How much does he have into it? He's an offensive coordinator by trade. I mean, that's what, you know. And then, so you've got Cam, Hedberg, Polisek, and oh, by the way, the actual offensive coordinator, Landry. And I say that not to speak ill upon any of them, but the collaborative effort and how often I'm just guessing that they potentially send Cam to the line with two plays and he calls his own of those two. I bet it's a lot. And I think that was a lot of what they did with Easton his final season, where it was like, hey, here are your two options. Whatever look you see, we'll go with what you think. And I think Cam is at that level where this is just a total and complete mastery of the system.
Well, it goes back to what Coach P said, what, a week ago, maybe 2 weeks ago. He said this is Cam's system.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was the exact verbiage, but it was something along those lines. It's like he grew within a system, made it his own, and now it's like, now it's yours. And that's the beauty of having a kid like that, is when they're able to see what a defense is doing pre-snap and can dictate his offense accordingly at the collegiate level, that is – You're putting yourselves 10 steps ahead of the game. And I'll speak from my own experience. I mean, when I played with Carson, I mean, we did it with Brock too, but Carson just had a mind that I don't know if we'll ever see it again, to be honest with you. That, I mean, they would call play concepts, and they would literally say that they would set the, like, a protection, and then say the play call would be Carson. And he would literally make his checks. It was a whole wide open playbook. So we would break the huddle, not knowing what play we were going to run, and then we would just have signals according to what we were doing for that week. And I don't know if they're doing that, but I remember numerous times where you're standing there waiting for your signal, looking at the defense, starting to try to figure out, okay, what concept are we going to run out of this? Are we going to have a cover two beater, cover three beater, you know, for a man, whatever it is. And as soon as you would get your signal, you know full well, okay, it's time to go execute. And I know that the guy getting the snap is going to put us in that position. So I think that the team having the confidence in Cam itself is also going to kind of – it's almost like a flywheel effect.
Yeah.
And I think the results that we have seen to date have spoken for themselves in that manner.
So let's talk about the wide receivers then. To me, that group is the group, like, Cam, all credit in the world. Everybody's excited about Marty Brown. Really impressed with Dan Larson and the offensive line. But to me, you go, okay, Ross. And by the way, like, last year was run the ball with T-Mac and then chuck it up to Eli and pray. Like,
yeah.
Like, by the time we got to the playoffs, that was sort of the plan. And it worked great, you know. But – you say, okay, T-Mac's gone. You know, three offensive linemen are gone. Eli just transferred. Oh, by the way, Raja and Braylon are down.
Yeah.
I'm going, okay.
So yeah, thanks.
To be where they are now at this level, you know, walk on kid like Chris Harris getting a scholarship and producing the way that he's producing. You know, one of the highest ranked recruits in the history of Bison football, Makai Collins, you know, all of a sudden becoming a dude and starting to moss people. And then just everything, obviously, that's happened with Bryce Lance, who's like having an All-America level season. Certainly, if you know, that was kind of always my argument with Christian. It's like, if you start to extrapolate these numbers by like per route run or per, you know, per target compared to some of these wide open 10 personnel offenses, you know, obviously now that we see what he's doing in the NFL, Christian should have been a two or a three time All-America. You know what I mean? But
yeah,
but NDSU system just doesn't work that way. I couldn't tell you. Maybe Vra was an All-American once. I don't know. I truly don't know.
I think his, my junior year, effectively his sophomore year, 2013. I mean, I think he had like 14 or 15 touchdowns. It was awesome. It was like every time there were certain plays called, one of them was called X hole. It was a three receiver set. Ryan would be in the middle. I'd be on the inside. And Ryan's job was to clear people out because he was so dang fast. Zach would beat his guy one-on-one and kind of take his time. And then my job was to catch the eyes of the linebacker and the opposite safety. And it was like, once I cleared number one in those days, that was the linebacker. And then I would catch the eyes of number two. Like, I would literally look him dead in the eye. As soon as his eyes caught mine, I would just run the other way and turn around. And in my head, I was like, we just scored. And by that time, Zach's catching the ball and he's running however far we were from the end zone. It was awesome. That's kind of a side tangent. But the receiver room, you know, we talked about it on a pod before the season started. I knew it was going to have to be by committee, and I knew there was going to have to be a guy that had to step up, that had to just be the guy. And clearly that's Bryce. the rest of them have all stepped up in moments that were needed. I mean, you look at the ETSU game when John Gores caught that ball on the sideline and that ETSU player slipped and it gets down to one inside the 5-yard line. Things like that. Just kind of looking at some names here on the sheet. Jackson Williams only has 3 receptions, but it seems like every time he's caught the ball, it's been a significant impact in the game.
Plus, he's so big on specials.
Yeah, right. So it's just like, it's like if one guy's not doing it, another one is. And it's just, it's consistent. And when you have that type of depth, you've got a lot of guys you can count on and get creative with that other teams do have to account for, even though they don't have statistics that jump off the page. When they're watching the All-22, looking at the tape, they're going, okay, this guy can do this. This guy can do this. And that guy can do that. So and it's just, it's a mental gymnastics game that forces defenses to prepare accordingly. And what it does effectively is get them on their heels. And then if you have the run game on top of that producing, how do you stop it? You can't.
Right. Right.
So this type of depth in the receiver room, 100% in my eyes, elevated this team to a national championship contender, along with Cam's play. Again, it goes back to that flywheel effect, that confidence in him, the confidence in the depth in the room. Invaluable when you go into a game on Saturday.
The other crazy thing that I just thought of too is, you know, I joked about the offensive game plan being chuck it up to Eli or hand it to T-Mac. The other huge part of the offensive game plan was gadget stuff for Raja, which they have literally not been able to run because even when he's healthy, they don't hand it to him because it's just not what you're going to do. If a guy is like, if a receiver's beat up, you're not going to run the Deebo Samuel stuff with him.
No, there's no reason to. You don't need those type of touches when you got to be at a certain percentage to be able to sprint the way you need to be effective.
Right. All right. Let's get into the UND game really quick. You know, I think obviously a terrible taste in everybody's mouth last year, but I mean, this has to be about as satisfying as it gets, right? I mean, that was minute 1 to minute 60, throttle down, whose house is this stuff? And, you know, I'll be really interesting, obviously, to see what happens when you know, next week against South Dakota State is going to be the matchup, right? Mm-hmm. But even SDSU USD and then NDSU USD, like those are really interesting to me because, I mean, the Bison baptized USD in the Dakota Dome last year in the playoffs. Yeah. That was unbelievable. So, you know, is the Valley that top heavy? That's interesting to me, but it's got to be an unbelievable feeling when you crack your in-state rival like that. And you, for you, that game would have been South Dakota State because there was no in-state rivalry game when you were playing. But you ever have that or even any other Valley team, like you didn't lose a whole lot of games, but that next year when you guys are like, oh yeah, these SOBs, that's got to be pretty fun.
I got to experience that twice. Thankfully only twice, because the third loss I had in college, the third and final was against Northern Iowa when the win streak was snapped at the Uni Dome. So I'll refer back to 2011, first national championship year. I was a freshman. We played Youngstown State at home. We were up 11 with, you know, midway through the fourth, something like that. And DJ was going to go untouched. And DJ, referring to DJ McNorton, he was about to score. No one was around him. He just literally dropped the football. No one touched him. He just dropped it. And they go, I think their quarterback was Kurt Hess back then. Youngstown went down and scored, cut it to 4. We punted, I think, right after that, and they went down and scored, and we just didn't recover, and that was our only loss in 2011. Fast forward to 2012. We had just come off maybe a week or two prior beating Colorado State, and Youngstown had also beaten Pitt that year. So we thought there was this big showdown matchup going to happen at the Dome, and we were out for blood because of what happened the year prior. That was the only team that prevented us from having an undefeated season. And that was one of those games similar to the USD playoff game last year in Vermillion, where if something could have gone right, it did. And it was over at halftime. And then ironically enough, the next week we lose to Indiana State. So that was 2012. And then fast forward to 2013, we go to Terre Haute, and same kind of thing. That game was over at the blink of an eye. So some of that redemption stuff, it's very real. I mean, you want to kind of avenge something that you clearly don't want to happen. It is quite frankly embarrassing. And they very much did that last week. So that was fun to see, especially when it is a rival, because that's what makes college football fun and what makes college football great in my eyes.
Absolutely. There's nothing like that kind of F those guys feeling. I absolutely get it. Trev, for old time's sake, we kind of went into it, but let's get a score prediction. Let's get you on the books.
Yeah. So I think the last score prediction I made, I was what, 1 point off.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool. Right now I'm thinking about 46 to 15. So I'm going to go a little obscure just so I can make it 100% accurate. 46, 15 Bison, kind of pulling away in the early third quarter.
Trev, buddy, thanks so much for coming on. Have a phenomenal weekend and go Bison. We want to thank Geb for his time. My prediction, I got 45-10 NDSU. I mean, I don't think Southern Illinois has it this year. I think the vibes are probably going to be bad. A lot of folks talking about fighting for their lives. I'm not buying it, man. Not against the Bison, not the way this team handles business on the road. I know, Coach Polisek called out the transitive property of football. Illinois State absolutely cracked this team last week. And obviously we saw what happened when NDSU went to Normal. These two teams are not on the same level right now. This NDSU team is locked in. Now, look, you could have the look-ahead game. They could be worried about South Dakota State. I'm not buying it. Too much leadership, too many old, good guys on this team. You talk about Braylon, you talk about Raj, you talk about Cam Miller, Gray Zabel, Mostart twins, Wirtz, Kubitz. It's too much age. There's too much experience on this NDSU team to not kick the bejesus out of SIU this weekend. We got 45-10. Have a phenomenal weekend, Bison fans. Let's go Bison.